Hello, and welcome to Revive Health's Daily Briefing Live for Monday, June 8th. This is our 30-minute review of the latest, most important news, resources, and advice for health system marketers and communicators dealing with COVID-19. I'm Ryan Coliani, your guest host for today's show. I also lead Revive Health's Issues and Crisis Practice. And I'm joined today by Jaleesa Wrights, Marketing Specialist here at Revive Health. She's also filling in for Chase as our show's producer today. Hey, Jaleesa, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Today we're joined by Elizabeth Musson, Senior Vice President in our Communications Group at Revive Health. Elizabeth spends her days reading about, thinking about, talking about all things healthcare. She has a great pulse on what's happening across the industry. She has a diverse communications background that includes communications planning, executive visibility, internal comms, media conferences, integrated campaigns, issues in crisis, and ultimately what we're here to talk about today, mergers and acquisitions. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hey, good morning, Ryan and Jaleesa.
So as with each show, we plan on covering the latest news on COVID-19 and ultimately how it relates to marketing communications. We're going to highlight helpful resources. We're going to share what we're seeing and hearing from marketing and communications professionals across the industry. We'll open the floor for your questions. And as we move through the show, please use the question queue in Zoom. That'll help us line up your questions. And we'll get to as many of them as possible today. You can also use the chat function to talk with other attendees. But if you'd like us to answer a question, please use the question queue only. We've also provided any relevant links in the chat so you can access those immediately. We'll also include those links in our recap that you can find on our website after the podcast goes live. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for Revive Health Daily Briefing Live. We'll be posting a recording of this episode by the end of today, so visit our website at www.thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for today's episode, as well as all other content that we've developed related to this crisis. A couple of rules and notes as we get started. One, we're not experts on COVID-19, so this is not a place to come for medical or scientific advice or resources. But what we do have are opinions on how marketers and communicators might want to manage the COVID-19 crisis. Obviously, everybody's situation is different. So in the end, you'll need to make the decisions that are best for you and your organization. So with that, let's begin. We always want to start with the latest count. We think it's very important for us to keep tabs on how the crisis is growing or evolving, and even how it's been receding over the last couple of weeks in its scale. That context will always impact what you're doing and how we are ultimately communicating about this. We use the Johns Hopkins dashboard. So a quick look as of 12 p.m. Central. The global case count is at 7,052,093. The global death count is at 409,886. Here in the United States, the count of cases is at 1,946,555. The death count in the U.S. is at 116,933. I'm sure, as some of you all have been seeing, you know, over the last month or so, that those death totals have been decreasing on a day-to-day basis, but obviously are still significant, but something for us to closely watch. So now we're going to jump into some of the articles and news that we've seen over the last couple of days and over the weekend. And we saw late last week that New York had a day where it had zero new cases. That was the first time that state had seen no new cases since early March. So certainly a positive sign in a state that has been impacted more than any other across the United States. But with that said, there is some cautious news that we're seeing in other markets, whether that's cities or states. We're seeing surges in states like Arizona and Texas. That are coming 2 weeks after the post-Memorial Day holiday. That also happened to be when the majority of the country reopened. So we certainly are seeing the country reopening, and it seems that we're probably seeing a reduction in vigilance in people following stay-at-home orders. And as those orders have been lifted, more people are venturing out, and certainly, obviously, increases the risk of the number of cases that may come in the near future. So as we've seen with the protests continuing across the country, we can also look for potential surges that are coming in the coming weeks as well. I know Dr. Fauci over the weekend talked about how those that may have participated in protests to encourage them to get tested, state and local health officials are doing something similar. And at Revive Health, we've been thinking closely about the disparities in healthcare. And I know, Elizabeth, that's something you've been watching closely.
Yeah, it is. I think both the impact of the protests on a potential resurgence, I think it's been really interesting to see how medical professionals have weighed into this conversation and kind of calling the systematic racism across the country a public health issue as well, so that, you know, not calling for people to not protest, but for people to do it in a way that is as safe as possible. But like you mentioned, Ryan, I think one of the things that I've been following most closely with all this is where we sit in the medical profession around these conversations of racism and what it means with health disparities. I think that there's been a lot of coverage around that. I think I read one in Kaiser Health News and then one, there was a good one in Modern Healthcare. From their editor in the opinion section, just talking about the real call and the need for action around health equity as a central principle to this conversation. So not just to kind of another thing we need to be thinking about, but that it really drives a lot of the disparity in our country is the inequity in the health system. So as communicators, just something we really need to be thinking about in the light of where a lot of our patients and consumers, where they might be thinking. We're seeing a lot of really great leadership from some health systems and stepping up and talking about what's happening.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. And it's kind of a fine line, I think, that health system marketers and communicators have to walk because obviously this virus is impacting specific communities far more than others. Mm-hmm. And, need to provide resources to do that, as well as, recognizing that some of the risks that these protests may bring to those communities as well. Elizabeth, what role should health systems be playing in either talking about resources that are available to the community to help help resolve COVID, but also, what safety tips or what type of information should they be giving to the community that may be in a city that's seeing some large-scale protests?
Yeah, well, I think first and foremost is always look to the people within the movement that are leading the movement. I think that's been a really important message across the board, that part of the struggle has been voices from Black leaders have not been heard. And so really looking to those voices and where possible, partnering with them to help inform the community. So using their voices to help share the information about how to protest in a safe way. So I think, the big takeaway for us is that it's continuing to listen and to partner where we can. I think health systems play a great role in kind of that community support, the social determinants, all of those pieces that many health systems have been working on over the last few years to really build that community health infrastructure. And I think leaning on some of those pieces to work in partnership with the leaders of the protests and that are organizing to lend their voices to make it work for them as well.
Yeah, I think that's really smart, making sure that we're hitting those key stakeholder groups with that information. But you also talked about kind of the infrastructure. And in a lot of cities, that's a major challenge where health systems may not be located in those communities or those that are being impacted the most, or the resources may not be as significant in other parts of town. And so I think communicating about what resources are available and what community outreach programs exist to bring the care to those communities and make it as easy as possible for them to receive it is absolutely critical as we navigate this pandemic. So jumping into another article that we saw, and I think this happened, I want to say on Friday, it might have been towards the second half of last week, but we saw that California is considering a new bill, and this is actually following a number of other states and requiring that their state attorney general consents and approves a variety of partnerships and mergers and acquisitions activity in the healthcare sector. So as I said, this follows a lot of activity and a lot of other state laws that we've seen in states like Connecticut and the state of Washington. And we know that this has been a very hot button issue for states in the last couple of years, this thought of hospital consolidation. I think most health system communicators are aware of a lot of the research that's out there on M&A, where it points to increased costs and decreased quality. And so that's going to be kind of the focus of our conversation as we get to later today. But I think when you see a state like California entering the fray like this, that essentially serves as notice to every single other state in the country that this may be something that other states may look to adopt. We're obviously in an election year, so this certainly could be a campaign issue in a number of other states, whether that is for state attorney general elections or even broader policymaker elections that we see in November. So a fascinating thing that we're seeing there. And Elizabeth, I know you've also been watching that closely.
Yes, well, being in California, this one is this one hits home. I think Attorney General Becerra has been active in this space for his entire tenure, and healthcare is one of the key topics in his platform that he's really looking to ensure that communities and people across the state have access to care, and has been a pretty outspoken proponent of when it comes to mergers and acquisitions, really examining the impact to patients and to communities. So not too surprising that he's taken this step, but as you said, Ryan, I do think it signals something that all health systems and communicators need to be thinking about, as we're going to talk a little bit about later on of in the post-COVID, what we're anticipating to be increased activity, just to make sure that you are aware of what's happening within your own state relating to your attorney general.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I wonder if even for those that may be operating in states that don't have this law in effect, is there not a legal responsibility, but is there a stakeholder relations responsibility for health systems that may be going through activity like this to be proactive and to raise what's happening with state attorney generals before this comes up? This obviously may not work in every single state or based on the relationship or the activity, but some might argue, and I'd love your perspective, Elizabeth, on if there is an opportunity for health systems to be proactive in this case.
Yeah, I mean, I think proactive is always the way we want to take, because it does help kind of control a little more of the narrative. And I think it actually just expands beyond just the attorney general into other elected officials and sort of that key, those key stakeholders on the elected side. I think something that we talk about a lot in any issue or in kind of those major milestones for health systems are the need to kind of break down any internal silos that may exist to make sure that you're working in partnership. So this would be a great example where working really closely with either kind of whatever is within your system, whether it's a public policy group or your government relations group, but making sure that you're in close communication with what those folks are hearing on the ground, the conversations that they're having, because it will certainly play into some of the public perception. But those can also be really important and valuable people when it comes to supporting any M&A activity. So if they're hearing from their constituents that this is good, that this is something that they want, they're also more likely to kind of lean their voices into the conversation.
Yep, no, really helpful counsel. It actually segues very nicely into the focus of today's conversation. So we're going to focus on mergers and acquisition activity in healthcare, both as a result of COVID and how that may be impacting this type of activity, but also communications considerations for health systems who may have paused plans for M&A pre-COVID, but are just now kind of preparing to publicly announce those partnerships in the current environment. So as everybody knows, you know, in addition to the loss of life and the impact from a health perspective and the tragedies that have occurred as a result of this pandemic, health systems across the board have experienced severe and rapid deterioration of their bottom lines, plummeting patient volumes, pausing of elective procedures, increased expenses, all those types of things that have really changed the financial reality for health systems. And so as a result of this financial uncertainty that's been caused by COVID and the pandemic, Hospital systems and health systems have terminated or even delayed potential M&A transactions. They did so just to ultimately focus on the crisis, to protect their workforce, to ensure their communities are being safe. And a couple of big examples that we've seen over the last couple of weeks, Beaumont Health in Michigan and Summit Health in Ohio called off their plans to form a $6.1 billion system. This one was a little bit surprising because it actually happened after a definitive agreement was signed. So this wasn't just walking away from an LOI. This was the deal was done and ready to go. But it shows just how significant a financial impact this has had. Beaumont, I believe, is the largest health system in the state of Michigan and obviously been significantly impacted in communities like Detroit. We also saw some smaller health systems in Illinois and primarily in Chicago that were planning to join forces as part of a $1.1 billion project that was going to increase the care sites across the city of Chicago. They were going to build a new hospital. There were going to be a dozen community health centers. It actually hits on kind of the health disparities piece that we talked a little bit about, yeah. A little bit about earlier. They called that off as a result of the financial impacts here.
Yeah, so I think that one, Ryan, I thought that was interesting as they talked about that one in the context of sort of healthcare deserts and how some of some cities are starting to see what you wouldn't think within a city that they would see healthcare deserts, but it's about those kind of clinics and the kind of output from the system, not just the hospital itself, but how else it's engaging with communities and bringing patients into the fold for those non kind of urgent or inpatient settings. So I think that one was really kind of interesting and surprising.
Yeah, there'll certainly still be kind of that gap, the gaps of care options there. And you know, it might be given the financial impacts, it might be some time before something like that may be able to be considered in Chicago. I believe some of that funding that was for that project was coming from the state house. We know how long that can take from a funding perspective at the state level. So in addition to those couple of examples of health systems that have called off plans, we do know that there are a number of systems that are re-engaging on M&A activity, both those that were planned pre-COVID, and we also know that there are some systems that may be looking for partners as a result of the financial impact that COVID has had on their health systems, or some of those larger health systems that may have larger cash on hand, maybe looking to acquire some of those struggling health systems and increase their market share in states or specific regions. And we anticipate that that type of activity is going to accelerate in the coming months and ultimately in the coming years. And so for communicators who are part of systems that are moving forward with plans or are considering looking for a partner, there are a couple of things that folks probably need to consider, Elizabeth. What are some of those things that health systems need to think about as they either resume previously discussed M&A activity or begin new activity as a result of COVID?
Yeah. Well, I think for us, it's really, you know, it goes back to that core, as communicators, one of the core things we want to do is make sure we're speaking to our audiences. So we have to make sure that when we're talking about this, we're talking about it in terms of value for communities, for physicians, for internal stakeholders, for patients, you know, so making sure that as you're putting together your messaging and your communications, that that it really does focus on the value and center on what it means for people. A lot of those messages leading up to now have been around, you know, improved quality, increased efficiency, those sorts of things. And I think a new message we're going to start seeing is a little bit more about stabilization. So maybe not that exact phrase, but the concept that when the system has been, and I mean like the greater system, greater healthcare system, has really been turned upside down, that some of this activity and these new partnerships are really about stabilizing and creating a sustainable future for the community, for patients. And I think that that's a message that will be really important to share because it does get to, you know, stabilization so you can continue to provide quality care. But it's just a little bit new in terms of what we've typically seen in the market. So you still have to be able to hit on the quality, the efficiency. I think the economic benefit, if you're able to point to, you know, specifics around you know, job creation or, you know, new buildings, new centers, medical centers or things like that. Those are also really good messages right now where there has been such a hard economic impact of COVID. I think that that's an area that will really resonate with communities, partly because we also know that with M&As, one of the concerns people often have is that when we talk about efficiency, it really means job losses and people, you know, jobs getting cut so that they can create those kind of efficiencies across the whole system. So I think for us, we always recommend like kind of thinking through not just what your proactive messages are, but what are your reactive messages? And I think there will be some new reactive messages and proactive messages within this kind of in light of this kind of context. So just a couple, couple of those things.
I think the stabilization piece is really an interesting one because it fits in a variety of different communities where health systems may operate. And I think the biggest impact that we'll probably see on the stabilization piece and the opportunity there is maybe for health systems that are in communities where they're the only healthcare game in town. Mm-hmm. And, you know, rural communities and those types of areas that have really been hit hard by this pandemic and may not have the resources to sustain for much longer, does a partnership allow them to continue to serve that community? And I think, you know, reinforcing that impact because those systems were already struggling before COVID. And this has just only kind of accelerated that potential timeline for being a part of a larger system potentially.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right on the rural hospital. There's been tons written about the impact to rural healthcare. And I think this goes back to some of what we're talking about with like talking to the people about the value. So getting those stakeholders involved that may be leaders within the community, both formal and informal. I think systems have built up a tremendous amount of goodwill in their communities with the work that they've been doing over the last several months with, you know, being on the front lines. And we've seen communities really rally around the systems, both with those kind of messages of, messages of thanks, donations, and all of those pieces. So I think there is a lot of goodwill, but as we know, like goodwill can quickly be forgotten. And I know, Ryan, you do. With your role in Issues Crisis, you often come in when some of that goodwill is forgotten. So I'm sure you have recommendations there.
It's a really good point. Yeah, it's a really good point because, I mean, the public perception around hospitals probably has never been higher than it is right now. But we also know that health systems are facing some incredibly unique challenges in this environment. And when you start thinking about M&A, you need to kind of consider some of those additional challenges that COVID may have brought. So if you're an acquiring system, so if you're the larger organization acquiring a system, and you had furloughs or compensation reductions or layoffs and those types of things, you're going to get hit pretty hard probably by internal audiences if you're out there spending a significant amount of your capital acquire another system while frontline employees are dealing with the financial impacts that may be happening. So I think that's an incredibly sensitive area that we need to be thinking about. We also need to look at things. I think where there's a New York Times piece today that talked about executive compensation and those types of things, or even severance packages. Those are going to be looked at negatively if systems are looking to consolidate while they're asking frontline employees to take a pay cut or to work less.
Yeah, definitely. I'm fully on board that internal communication overall right now has become more and more important, but definitely in times of change, you know, not just communicating what's happening and that there will be an acquisition and all of that stuff. But we know the hard work is actually once the deal's done and then integrating the two systems and the processes and the people and the culture and all of that stuff. So the more you can do on the upfront side to bring your employees along, physicians are going to be incredibly vocal throughout this process. So making sure that you're bringing those groups along in addition with the community, but a special focus on your own folks will pay off in the end.
Yeah, and I think there might be some additional areas that most M&A activity hadn't had to consider until COVID happened. I mean, most times during these M&A activities, clinicians were largely unimpacted, or they expanded, you know, payrolls and jobs for those areas. Most of the losses were on the administrative staff side. But I could easily see systems reevaluating that approach as a result of COVID. They may look to get leaner. They may look to combine physician groups and create opportunities and efficiencies that way. So there may be some additional risk that health systems need to consider there. And you're absolutely right. The integration phase is going to be unbelievably critical, one, to retain your top talent and those that you absolutely need, but also to avoid some of the criticism that may come as a result of it.
Oh, well, trying to financially recover from what's been happening over the last few months. So big jobs for our health system communicators for sure. But I mean, I think I guess overall, like, the making sure the message here is that M&A is you know, going to continue, and you don't have to shy away from it, but you just have to think about it in a little bit of a different way than you have in the past. So I think it's important.
One last thing before we jump from the M&A conversation. I think one important thing to think about also is timing, particularly in markets and as public health officials continue to talk about a potential wave two. When is the right time for you to announce something like this? I think in the short term, you're going to see some take advantage of kind of the decreased activity and conversation around COVID to take advantage of it. But for those that may be planning a little bit longer term out, there may be some risk about planning for announcements in November, December, January, February, given a potential wave two that may come and focus may return on COVID.
Yeah, great point.
So that's it for today's show. Please let us know if there's anything you'd like us to cover tomorrow. You can post your thoughts in the Zoom chat tool for that. Elizabeth, thanks so much for taking time out of your day.
Yeah, it looks like we have one question that maybe we could, Liz just came through. Maybe we can try to answer that real quick.
Let's see.
So this one says, is it really the role of a hospital to be a major employer in town or to provide quality, cost-effective care, which may require significant downsizing? Well, I'll jump in. And then Ryan, please add. So I do think that most, especially rural communities, hospitals are major employers. So it may not be of choice, but it is one of the, especially post-COVID, it is one of the industries that has been able to sustain a bit more. You know, we've still seen some of the decrease and the layoffs and the furloughs and things. But I think a lot of health systems in rural communities especially are going to be the major employer. So there is sort of balancing. That's where we talk about that economic message and the economic benefit. So the quality, cost-effective care, which may require significant downsizing. I mean, I think that's where communicators have to be really lockstep with administration and in these conversations early around M&A, because once you get that first message out, that you have to make sure that you're kind of not combating something different down the road, that whatever your message is has to sustain through multiple parts of this. So Ryan, I don't know if you have a feeling of like balancing or any recommendations around balancing your role as an employer with the cost-effective quality care.
I think it's going to have to be both. So I think that, you know, you may be looking at downsizing to provide that high quality, cost-effective care, but it's also going to ensure that, you know, the financial stability of the system is ultimately going to ensure that that hospital or health system is a major employer in town for years and decades to come. So I think we need to lean into both of those messages, no matter the situation. Because you're absolutely right. The health systems are always going to be major employers in the community, but they're also facing some unique challenges now that may result in them looking a little bit different than they did 3 or 4 months ago. So with that, we're gonna close things down. As I mentioned, if there's anything you'd like us to cover in the next episode tomorrow, please post that in the chat tool. Elizabeth, Jaleesa, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good conversation.
On tomorrow's show, we'll have Jeff Spear. He'll be back in the saddle hosting alongside Jared Usray. Jared will be on to talk a little bit about how the role of health system marketers is going to change as a result of COVID. But he's also going to talk about the opportunities that COVID has presented for marketers. Remember, visit thinkrevivehealth.com/COVID-19 for a recording of today's episode. And for all of our content related to this crisis, subscribe to us on iTunes. Remember to let others know about this podcast if you found it beneficial to your work. And to all of you out there, just hang in there. Keep up the amazing work you're all doing every single day. The skills and perspective that you're bringing as marketers and communications leaders to our communities is absolutely critical in helping us move through this crisis. We'll see you all tomorrow and talk to you then. Thank you.